Support for Boston Public Radio comes from North Shore Music Theater. Audiences can experience the true story and musical journey of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. Jersey Boys comes to Bill Haney's North Shore Music Theater May 7th through May 19th. Tickets at nsmt.org. And Newbury Court, a full-service retirement community in Concord, Massachusetts. Newbury Court is committed to creating active, independent lifestyles for persons 62 and over. More at newburycourt.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Marjorie's in a total frenzy. Marjorie Egan and I live from our GBH studio at the Boston Public Library. I'm going to be in a frenzy in a minute. We start talking about the end of the buffet. What you don't eat can kill you. That's according to a new study published in The Lancet. Okay. That's a British medical journal, which finds that not eating enough grains, fruits, and vegetables is responsible for more deaths worldwide than tobacco. I think it was something like 20%. Getting people to quit smoking was hard enough, but how do you get people to eat better, particularly if they don't have access to healthy food? Joining us for his take on this and other headlines about food policy and food culture is Corby Kummer. Corby's a senior editor at The Atlantic, an award-winning food writer, and a senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition and Policy. Hello, Corby Kummer.
Hello there.
Okay. You know, I'm not going to get all worked into a frenzy about this. So you can tell me, Corby, about, I mean, it does seem to make common sense that not eating your vegetables and having a poor diet overall is not going to lead to a long or healthy life.
But it's worse than that. It's not just not a lot. It's like 20% of the deaths worldwide.
Yeah. You need to eat short on fresh vegetables, seeds, nuts, but heavy in sugar, salt, and trans fats leads to big problems.
This is huge. It is a meta study. It's years of data conducted by The Lancet. I actually saw a printout. This is the kind of housecast we have. We had a housecast who arrived bearing the printout of The Lancet study with lots of citations.
Oh, my gosh.
Circled because it's huge, because it points a big fat finger at sodium and salt as a reason that people are dying. But the idea that 11 million deaths could have been avoided in 2017 alone with better diets, and that 21 in 5 deaths is attributable to bad diets. That means that all of the government's and the public's money should be going to the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition Policy, to all of the food programs we care about. It's a stunning figure that healthcare costs have to be changed. The news from this, I thought, was the sodium, the absolute clear indictment of sodium.
And it is the sodium in most of the world where this is a problem, is as a preservative or as a food additive, or what is it?
Gosh, I'll tell you, it's a food preservative. So it is the sodium. It's not the salt that we add at the table from our shakers. You're just fine with that. Although it pains me to see people just dousing their food with soy sauce and salt, that's not the problem. It's what the industry is using, both to make it palatable in quotes, and especially to preserve it for a long time.
Well, the problem is high blood pressure.
Yeah,
right?
It's high blood pressure that leads to cardiovascular death and stroke.
Okay, just to be clear about that, because not everybody gets high blood pressure from salt.
So, no, but it is a prime cause of high blood pressure
Correct.
For those who do.
That's right.
Okay. So
I like salt.
While this is not killing people on the whole notion of unhealthiness, not surprisingly, this administration continues to roll back some of the school lunch standards that are being set by Michelle and Barack Obama. What does this mean in concrete ways? What's different under Trump in a school lunch, or what will be, from what it was like under the Obamas?
So what Sonny Perdue, the USDA secretary, came in saying was, chocolate milk made me as fat as I am. He didn't say fat, but he said as big as I am. It made me, and we can't outlaw chocolate milk. So this was one of the dumb red meat to the masses, to the Make America Great people. Lines that he came in with. But what he was bowing to was really ambivalent. I'm ambivalent about this. The School Nutrition Association, which is made up of the people who give us school lunch, were somehow cornered by industry, which said, these sodium reductions are killing us. Kids don't like it, but what they really meant was we, the food companies, don't want to lower sodium in our food because it's too much trouble and we're worried we're going to lose sales. So we're going to use as an excuse that kids don't like it. Whereas, in fact, when you gave it to kids, they were fine with it after a couple of weeks. It just takes 22 days or something to retrain your taste buds so you don't miss the salt. They were doing fine. But the food companies got to the School Nutrition Association, and the School Nutrition Association said, enough with these sodium restrictions, enough with all these pesky whole wheat requirements. And so the administration has formally rolled them back. And New York State Attorney General Letitia James has said, this is killing our kids, and we don't believe in it, and you had no right to roll back these rules.
Well, I'm sorry.
I thought it was all about another way to get even at Obama. Michelle Obama's
achieved
thing. Let's just get rid of that, too.
Is there any evidence, though, that, I mean, common sense would suggest that, as you say, whole grains and less salt and all this less sugar added or whatever is going to lead to a healthier kid. But were the Obama school lunch programs in place long enough for there to be proof that they work, or common sense is all we have?
No, it's not just common sense. It's actually proof. And the New York State lawsuit says that all of science points to, this is entirely based on science, this being the original rules. There's nothing like just school marmish finger wagging, you ought to do this. It was based on science. It's going to reduce deaths in the future, because once kids get used to salt, they keep eating salt. They get hypertension, high blood pressure early in their lives. It has really bad effects as they get older. It's bad, salt. So that's based on science. They're based on science. The Trump rollback is just based on industry pressure.
So we're talking to Corby Cummer, and I have to say, while it was depressing to read the story about the school lunches, it was not 1/100th as depressing as this horrible. I assumed it was a joke, but it's not. The headline in Vox.com is something I was hoping I would not live to read. The title is "The Death of the Buffet Chain Explained." I have to say, I don't think I've had many better times than at an all-you-can-eat buffet. Mm-hmm. So I'll make the case for it in a minute. We're going to ask listeners about it at the end of the show,
Jim, you were kicked out of several all-you-can-eat
buffets.
No,
actually, my best friend in law school, well, before we find out what the explanation is for the death of the buffet chain, it is true there was something called Beef and Brew.
Beef and Brew.
In the Greenwich Village when I went to law school at NYU. And Jake Smith, who was my closest friend, at least for part of law school, he and I would go there. And I know people find this hard to believe, but if you knew Jake and you knew me at that age, you wouldn't find it hard to believe. I would say 50% of the time, the manager, went once a week. It was all the beer you could drink, all the steak you could eat, and all the salad or something. Who was eating salad? And 50% of the time we were there, the manager would walk over to us and say, "I'll cut you a deal. If you agree to leave now, you can leave free," meaning you don't have to pay. That's how much we were. It was grotesque. It was really, we almost had to be like carried home on a sedan chair. So we'll get to my personal experiences in a minute.
Yeah.
Beyond, why is the buffet chain in trouble?
Well, it's not economical. It is, you know, if indeed they're trying to fill you up on bread and mac and cheese at the beginning, and then saving the carving station where you always went for last, it doesn't work out. So for a long time, buffets did work out because they could buy big bulk food for cheap. They could take advantage of food deals and just serve whatever was cheap in big quantity. It removes a lot of labor costs because people are serving themselves. But then the recession, 2008-10, made food costs rise. And so when food costs went up, this stopped making it economical. People were overusing it. But I think that part of the fact is there aren't as many greedy law students who are there to tempt people. What there are, for example, followers of the Atkins diet and keto and all of these paleo diets
meat.
So they want to go to a buffet. And so probably your callers are going to say, "I'm on the high protein diet. This is a godsend to me because I want all the meat I can get." But there aren't that many people who want to go to buffets. And there was a really interesting, I think, part of this piece in Vox that we saw is that there's one chain that has beat the odds. And that is...
I didn't get that far because I'm going there wherever it is.
It's not Ponderosa. It's an unbelievably successful chain, the Golden Corral.
Oh, I never heard.
We've never heard of the Golden Corral.
No, never been there.
And this 25-year-old reporter Kate Tiffany for the Goods in Vox went and talked to the owner, and he said essentially, it's not just because I've been a good manager and I've watched my costs. It's because so many people around me have died that I'm the only guy left standing. And so I can make a decent business model out of the buffet. But it was the fewer people eating in restaurants and food prices going up after the recession that was sort of the death knell.
You know what I don't understand about this? And I haven't finished the whole story. I'll finish it before we get to our discussion. And I don't mean this in the unkind way. I mean it in a factual way. We're one of the fattest nations on earth. And I thought one of the reasons why, I don't think I'd ever been to a good buffet where the place was not packed. And I assume it was because we weigh too much in this country, we're too big, and the perfect place for that kind of person at an affordable rate was an all-you-can-eat kind of thing. We're no thinner than we were when buffets were flourishing. So what's changed? Just that food's gotten more expensive? Is that what it is?
We're not at all thinner.
Exactly.
I mean, the Ponderosa chain by the Bonanza Star.
I did not know that. By Haas. Haas,
yeah.
Haas Cartwright. Dan Blocker.
Yeah, Dan Blocker, who was one of the first Jewish TV stars.
He was
Jewish?
I didn't
pretty
know that.
Pretty sure, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty exciting.
And that was such a weird thing because he was in a Western.
There were Jews in the West. There were a couple. Go ahead.
So I've heard. Okay.
Ponderosa
Steakhouse. So there were 305, and then they all filed for Chapter 11. So there's lots of these that are going out of business. And it's partly the idea of, you know, fast casual. You go in with apps, you pick it up.
Did you ever, I love your food reviews. This year. Did you ever review an all-you-can-eat place?
No. I did review Las Vegas restaurants. Why do I bring them up? Because the thing in Las Vegas is buffets.
Yeah.
They revived fancy upscale buffets. But in those, they would plate the individual portions. So in a way, I thought that was much more of a turnoff because if you were taking, you know, one plate after another. Sure, it was like you're getting everything free, but it was showing you just how fat and greedy you were going to get.
Let me tell you, I'm going to talk about some of the rules of the buffet when we think. when you have, like, stuffed yourself to the point where you're ready to explode, the best moment that can ever, you're both slim, so you can appreciate this, the best moment is when the wait person takes your plate and gives you a clean one. I mean, it really doesn't get... And there are a couple of extremes. Like, our agent takes us once a year to the Sunday brunch
at the Four Seasons,
which is very expensive and insanely good. And then there's that place in Watertown. I probably shouldn't mention the name that I went to once, where the RMV is.
You mean the Old Country Buffet?
Well, you said it, not me. Where it literally is like they open 50 cans and then put it out. It is so, you obviously never eaten there. Okay, so in any case, we'll return to the all-you-can-eat. It's pretty bad.
Okay, so I'm dying to ask you about this next question, because I get why the restaurants are upset about these beer gardens, but I love the beer gardens, the whole idea of being out on the Esplanade, the Night Owls shifts, got the beer garden down
there.
This
is in Boston we're talking about.
In Boston, so the restaurants are really ticked off. Do they have a case?
Yeah, so Boston Magazine had this incredibly tempting piece of wildly attractive young people on the Greenway having beer at 5 o'clock on a summer night with festive lights strung up behind them on the Greenway.
Wonderful.
And we might as well be in Europe. We could be in Germany. There wasn't one person of color in that attractive picture I happened to notice, but other than that, it was a very appealing springtime, early summer picture. So why do restaurants hate this? Because they've been paying high rent. Their liquor license laws in Boston are crazy and restrictive to try to reduce the number of people who have them the way the old taxi medallions worked. There are very few of them. It takes a long time to apply to get a liquor license. It's really expensive. So, of course, it burns up these people who have worked really hard and paid a lot of money in order to get a liquor license to watch these beer companies. So it's some local brewers, but I think it's probably most of the InBev consortium, which owns almost every so-called artisan brewer in the country now. It's a big scandal in the beer world. Complete consolidation.
Really?
So they
I didn't
can
know that.
Open.
It's like the marijuana problem
yeah,
we have in
I did
Massachusetts.
Not know.
Oh, it's really bad. It's called InBev. So they get as long as they like as their loophole. So all summer they can do this. And what the Massachusetts Restaurant Association, whose head Bob Luz said, we really are not the place where fun goes to die. We're just trying to protect our owners.
But, you know, it seems to me this is perfectly analogous to the criticism that restaurants had about food trucks
right.
when they started. So how did public policymakers strike a balance? Obviously, we have a lot of food trucks. What did they do there, and can that lesson be transferable? Because I feel the same way you do about beer gardens. I love, as you know,
yeah.
how I feel about outside drinking on summer nights.
But
it's
I also
great.
Feel horrible about
so
the
do
liquor
I.
licenses, which I think is another scandal.
Well, so in that...
So what did they do with the food trucks?
It is the food truck analogy, and what I really wanted to do was already a very provocative piece in Boston Magazine about the beer garden fight, and I wanted to go out and do some more reporting on it. What happened with food trucks, it's really analogous because the bricks and mortar people said, we're paying high rent. How dare you come in with your food truck and usurp all our business? The city went against them and said, we're going to impose high parking fines. Lots of spaces will be protected for food trucks. We believe in food trucks. Brings vitality, brings in small business people. And the economics of food trucks wound up being that as soon as you were really successful in a food truck, you opened a bricks and mortar location. That's the story of Clover Food Trucks. Clover was just a food truck. Now it's this really successful chain. You've
well,
had
Roxy was the
Air
same
Mirror.
Way too, right? The grilled cheese thing.
And the Bon Mi place.
Yeah, Bon Mi, right.
The wonderful Irene May.
May-May.
Yeah.
May-May. And so these are places that they were young, strapping entrepreneurs, and they have moved up in the world, and they did want bricks and mortar because the business worked out better for them. It was more year-round, less seasonal, and it was better for them. With beer, you're up against, you know, food truck owners didn't have a huge lobby, and they didn't have a lot of money. Beer companies like InBev are rich. They have a lot of money. They don't need breaks from the city to be struggling small business people. A couple of local brewers, maybe, but not the big brewing company.
By the way, speaking of May-May, the Lee family, the three siblings,
yes, they were here.
They were here a day you
were. Yes, they were.
Two of them, maybe three of them, will be with me on Greater Boston Thursday night.
Oh, great.
So we'll talk not only about what they're doing over there. Oh, it's a fabulous
restaurant.
Place.
Yeah, they're
a
great
Park
local
Drive.
Business success
it's
story.
It's great. We're talking to Corby Kummer. So
this is a gross story.
The pork story?
Yes, it is
well,
just gross.
Well, why don't you broach it then, if you would?
Well, apparently we're going to have the pork company, the manufacturers, it's like the fox guarding the chicken house. They're going to be monitoring themselves to see if the pork is clean enough and germ free enough and dread disease.
And the
speed
workers
up,
are not dying on the
and
line.
And they're going to speed up how many? Well, you tell the story.
So I have a horrible smirk of dread on my face because what this reminds me of is all the stories that the daily follies of the White House make us keep our eyes off.
Right.
And here is a case of the Trump administration constantly loosening the rules on consumer safety. And in this case, it's worker safety that's going right down the drain and resulting in mauling and horrible, disfiguring, life-incapacitating diseases and illnesses and accidents for meat industry workers. How do they do this? They do this by saying, we're going to speed up the line. It's just efficiency. What does speeding up the line mean? It means that animal carcasses that weigh 100 to 300 pounds come flying at you, 12 to 17 a minute. You have to do one thing to them with a big machete that can wound you just as easily as it wounds the animal. And of course, all kinds of bacteria and pathogens are more liable to enter when the workers are being less careful, and especially when the administration is paying industry to close its eyes and saying, we'll let you inspect your own plants. We're going to hold you responsible for training your people because they have no idea how to train them, and they have no incentive to train them. And the administration is saying, we'll turn a blind eye in the name of efficiency.
You're going to get enraged again?
No, I just...
You have
just,
to pace the rage.
You know, it's an unusual thing in the United States to feel like the government is out to get you. And that's what these stories make you feel like. The government's out to get those of us who want to eat pork or bacon or things like that, or ham, or those kids in school who want to have healthy lunches. It's like they're out to get you.
They're like beating the odds. They're out to protect industry and protect their funders and say... Yeah, there might be some more accidents, but eventually they'll be caught. You know, there'll be a scandal, but industry will have made so much more money in the meantime.
Can I tell you, Marjorie, when you're, everybody's different, I would acknowledge this, but when you're upset about the news of the day, about, you know, the dead pigs coming down line too quickly, or the road
workers
decision,
getting injured.
Or what I've always found to be a pretty decent antidote is an all-you-can-eat buffet. Have you not found that? I mean, you're really down in the
dumps. There's nothing
like
stupefying yourself so that you can care about nothing but rolling out of the restaurant.
And by the way, can I say, I am shocked by a guy who is as slim as you are to understand the fundamental central rule about buffets, which, believe me, she does not understand. Hello there out there. I'm talking to Corby at the moment.
Okay.
It is, you don't fall prey to the heavy things at the front, the heavy cheap things. You don't like eat the macaroni and cheese, Marjorie, or the mashed potatoes, Marjorie, or a loaf of bread before you get started. It's at the beginning of the line because it's cheap and they want you to be full.
Some of us like mashed potatoes, Jim.
No, can I explain this if I just may? Because we may not have time later. First, you go right for the shrimp. I mean, is that...
All right. Do I have time? I have to tell the single best put down ever in the history of the Aspen Institute or the annals of social class distinction.
Thank you very much.
There's a shrimp all you could eat buffet, the opening ceremony of the Aspen Ideas Festival, where I went, where one of the typical billionaire Aspen matrons was behind me. And she was looking shocked at my plate. I was heaping with shrimp because I live for this opening buffet every year. And I said, I'm a picture of greed. I hope you won't tell anyone. And she said, without pausing, if I knew anyone you did, I would.
One of the great put-down lines, like
that's
in the history of the world.
That is great. Well, you know, it's a smart thing to do at the buffet.
But there
I suppose
is a strategy.
Yeah.
You don't enjoy them, I would guess, right?
I love buffets.
You do?
I used to love that one a million years ago when they had the soup and salad buffets in Boston. Remember, you could go in and get the huge.
Do you mean super salad?
Yes.
Another casualty of the recession, which I had not watched go. And also steakhouses. It said buffets and steakhouses were the casualties of the recession.
Do you remember when we used to do every Friday, we would do an hour with the Andelman brothers from Fan
Gourmet?
That is
correct. Yes, we did.
And one of the Andelman brothers, David, by the way, was at the head shaving thing the other day with the governor.
Yeah, good for him. Good for him.
Is they would talk, and we have to, if one of you guys back in Brighton could look up the name of this before we have this talker at about 1:30, we're going to talk to the listeners about the death of the all-you-can-eat buffet. This is this place in Rhode Island where they have everything.
Oh, yes.
They have, you know, lobster. They have all the high-end things that most buffets do not have. All the high-end things. And my favorite thing is when you go to the website, the thing it says in banner letters at the top, 2-hour limit. Because apparently, like colleges bus in, it's like $100 or something, colleges bus in the whole football team, and these 320-pound linemen get out of the thing. But it sounded, we meant to go, and we've never done that.
No, we have not.
We have to,
Jim,
do that.
I think it should be on your bucket list.
Can I tell you something? I would be willing to collaborate with you on a fine piece on the, maybe for the Atlantic or something, as an expert witness on the all-you-can-eat buffet. So you have my number, correct?
Yes. We'd have to do the larger economics of it,
exactly.
The overall death.
That's what
but
I meant.
Then the picture of undying greed.
Exactly. And
listen,
if I knew anybody, what?
To this, Robert just sent me an email and said about 8 or 9 years ago, our neighbors, really cheap, held their daughter's wedding reception at the country buffet.
My kids aren't married yet. I'll be doing
Watertown.
That. Oh, the Nordic Lodge in Charlestown, Rhode Island is the name of the thing. Thank you very
the
much.
The Nordic Lodge. I think, oh my God, Robert.
No, but you know what it said
neighbors
on the wedding invitation to the country, old country buffet?
What did it say?
It said, bring your own cans. It did. And they provided the can opener, so it was actually worked out.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Corby, it's great to see you.
Thank
if you,
you
want to
much,
call
Corby.
In to the buffet discussion at about 1:30, it's 877-301-8970,
okay? Jim is going to tell us all the fine points because he spent a lot of his life. At
I
the,
have.
Not to mention
some
the hot food bar.
Some of my finer moments.
Everyone I know who tells me they met Jim, you know where they met him?
Hot food bar at Whole Foods.
Hot bar at Whole Foods.
Because where I spend my time. Corby, it's good to see
Thank
you.
Thank you very much, Corby Cummer. Corby joins us every week. He's senior editor, he's a senior editor at The Atlantic, an award-winning food writer, and a senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition and Policy. Coming up, does making America great again mean making science great again? That conversation is next with two MIT economists, Simon Johnson and Jonathan Gruber. They're next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.